What is up? Happy Tuesday. Welcome to episode 79 of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Weed, joined by, as always, EG Stuffy and EG in Control. And, you know, we did this, like, thing where Thorzane, he couldn't make it today. He had jet lag and shit, you know, that sort of thing. And so, well, the Muslim, he was playing some WCS today. So, you know, making sure that we do not leave outside the walls of EG, the next obvious replacement was Xenocider.
Oh, live.
So, yeah, welcome. Live also playing WCS. Then the next one after that, Xenocider. What's up, dude? Welcome. Welcome to Inside the Game.
What's up? Happy to be here. You know, even though I'm like the lastiest of options, still here. Don't care.
Good. Good. That's the attitude we want you to have. Just
and just
don't
so
care.
People know, like, it's really important they know Thorzane will be back. We promise. This is just a one-time thing. So just try. Try and tolerate.
Unless, of course, he's amazing, and then you as a community band together and get Thorzane kicked off the show, which you're probably all very capable of doing. And now I'm just giving ideas. No, I'm just kidding. But we didn't want to just not have a guest, so here we are. And we got plenty to talk about this week. But before we do, our hellos. Xenocider, what's up? We haven't really had a chance to catch up with you because you've never been on the show, so maybe you can introduce yourself to anyone who's like, where's Thorzane, or where's the Muslim, and where's Idra? Like, what's going on with this show right now?
Well, I'm Xenocider, the newest recruit of EG, and I play Terran and play a lot of games and stuff, so yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right, excellent.
Crazy good introduction.
It was good. Suppy, hello, sir. How are you?
Good. I watched some movies this weekend.
You so did?
I'm broadening my horizons.
Oh, what did you watch, Suppy?
I watched Monsters Incorporated.
What?
Yeah. I never saw that one before. And then I saw
Hold on. I thought you were going to drop some, like, amazing shit. Like, it'd be like, Wheat, I watched Man Eats Dog. Or I watched, you know, fucking A Clockwork Orange, or, you know, I
watched A Law-Abiding Citizen. And then does that count?
And then you said you watched Monsters, Inc., man. Like,
it was good. It was a good movie.
Man Bites Dog.
Yeah.
It's about a serial killer and a documentary about a serial killer. But it's all fictional. But it's really well done. You'd like it.
But you
watch Monsters, Inc. Can I give you a list?
Yeah. Okay. Forward me it.
Okay, we'll do that.
Man Bites Dog, you said?
Yeah, Man Bites Dog.
Cool.
Man Eats Dog. No, that's that was the Korean version of it that didn't make it out there. So it's Man Bites Dog. In Control, hello?
Hello.
Another week.
What's that?
Another week. Here we are.
Another week on the grind. This week I'm super, super busy. We're doing a lot of SD2L broadcasts because we need to get this entire season in before DreamHack Bucharest.
Yeah, a lot
we're kind of flying
still.
By the. What's that?
A lot of games still.
Yes, a lot of games.
Yeah.
I actually am really excited. Tomorrow I'm going to be interviewed by Adam Sessler, who is, in my mind, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, gaming journalist there is. And he's kind of an inspiration to me because I think it's funny that I find him so inspiring in this way. But he's actually like one of the best public speakers I've ever encountered. He doesn't use a teleprompter, and he doesn't read off a script, and his fucking vocabulary is that good. It's insane.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time. So I assume that's with Rev3, because that's what he's working with? Okay.
Yep. He just did a recent video. He does, like, you know, he's a gaming personality, so he's got daily videos, but his most recent, like, what am I doing this week type of video, There's a good 5 seconds in there where he mentions that he's interviewing me. So I will try to remember you guys, make it big time. But like
oh,
for now,
man, I look
that's
forward to
what
those
we're
days.
Dealing with. Yeah,
like, I knew that guy once, man. He was,
yeah, well,
he was
I'll remember you guys
on
I'll,
the up
I'll,
and up. Yeah,
I'll,
you say that
you
now.
Tweets, you know what I mean?
Say that now.
The other thing is Elysium comes out this weekend, which I'm actually. I get hyped about some shit. Like, everyone knows that. I really feel like this could be movie of the year, but that's probably not true, but I hope it is. So we'll see. And then other than that, I know that some people ask me about this kind of stuff too, but I'm going to have my my Warhammer army is getting... I'm delivering it to Frontline Gaming, which is a local company, but they're like huge Warhammer enthusiasts in San Francisco area. And they're going to professionally paint my army, and then I'm going to start competing at tournaments.
Your whole army?
Yeah, nice. My Terranid army.
Nice, dude.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Nice. All right. Well, there you go. That's what we've been up to. So let's go into the topic list of today. And yes, this weekend is a battle of events, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But most certainly, the if I was Slasher, the breaking news that we need to talk about right away is the farewell of Stefano. It is hot on the headlines right now, and if you don't know, basically, bring up the first picture. It basically today was I don't know how this even came to be. Did Stefano declare this as his last match, by the way? Like, was
yeah.
it? He did.
It's been on for a while. He said WCSE will probably be his last event. His contract is up September 1st, but he's been talking about this being his final StarCraft run since almost the beginning of the year. He's known he's wanted to retire.
So, at the end of the game, congratulations, you deserve it. Sorry for the fans. This game is not for me anymore. Goodbye. And everyone was like, all the feels.
The feels.
Feels.
But really, I was really impressed with Stefano. Sort of like, if you guys watched the WCS Extra that they did the interview on.
I did, yeah.
It was, you know, his response was really good. Like, I was really, you know, he did say, even though it might have seemed like it sometimes I hated the game and whatnot, or, you know, it really, thank you, Blizzard, for making this game, and thank you to the community for making this an amazing experience. And
his wording wasn't that he said it seemed like I hated the game, it's that he said he didn't care. Which he
didn't
very,
care, right.
He worked very hard to put that attitude out there, so that's why he spoke to it.
Yes. But this kind of, I mean, we talked a little bit about Stefano saying he's going to retire, but when the day actually comes, you know, do you think the fact that Stefano had put that out there and this wasn't any sort of an immediate, like, by the way, I'm retiring type of a deal, like, does it make it any easier on the team, just overall? What are your thoughts on it?
You know, for me, this was like, when I first heard him talk about retiring, I got real pained pangs inside me. Like, I was very sad because he's definitely one of the absolute biggest superstars that EG could ever have and has had. Like, he's just a gigantic name, it goes without saying. So I was kind of worried for the texture of the team. I was worried, and then I started like thinking even about him, and I'm like, dude, this guy has talent. Like, he could actually probably win another $100,000 or $200,000,
right,
and stick it out. Because with Legacy of the Void, I mean, you can talk all you want about the success of LoL and Dota and all that, but StarCraft's going to be around and hyper-competitive with big prize pools for another 3-4 years at least. And there's no reason why Stefano would have to quit. Like, his style isn't over or anything like that, you know? That was my initial response, where I was like, wow, this is really dumb. Like, this kid should ride this out as long as he can. But then I kind of talked to him more and got to know him, and he's just always, like, his family has very much so, like, they came to support him, but initially they were like, yo, you got to go off and be something really awesome. Like, gaming is something you do as a kid. Like, you're getting older now. And he very much so has that opinion of himself too. Like, he's very serious about school, despite his party boy and bad boy attitude that you see all the time. He's actually like, he wants to go to school and kick ass. He wants to crush it. And he doesn't want to do it when he's 30. So as I kind of got more, I kind of settled on the idea that this is actually what he wants, I was like, I don't feel sorry for him. I feel happy for him. He's getting out under his own volition. This is his choice, and he's going out on top. Like, that's pretty amazing.
Suppy and Xenoslider, I mean, Xenoslider, I know you've been with the team, you know, not as long as some of the other guys, but what's your opinion from that point of view? And then Suppy, if you have anything to add.
Well, I think that me and Suppy can both really relate to what Stefano's going through with school and whatnot, because our parents are basically the same way, wanting us to go to school as soon as possible, pretty much. But yeah, he's definitely pretty interesting because his entire career. It looks like he wanted to go back to school, but he was just like, well, since I'm making jillions of dollars, I might as well stay. It's kind of weird. I don't know many people that would like prefer to go to school over playing games for money, but I think he wants to just do well in school to secure his future, and I can definitely respect that. So good luck to him, I guess.
I think I can share one thing, too, that's kind of cool. And I hope I'm not in trouble for saying this, because it's definitely not, like, public information, but I think it's a really cool thing.
You're going to get in trouble, but say it anyway.
Yeah, it's something cool he did. He actually took a big, a percentage of his winnings over the years, and he actually invested it by buying a really expensive downtown Paris, super nice apartment. And he's been subletting it over the years, which is actually it's earned him money. He's made money off this. So the reason I bring this up is because that's the depth of like preparation he has. And then when he can choose to live in it whenever he wants, and it's paid off because A, he bought it, but B, it was then getting subletted. And that's Stefano. Like, he's always had an eye on the future. He always knew that gaming was something that he was gonna hit and quit, and he's done it super intelligent. So it's kind of crazy.
Well, Suppy, do you have anything to add?
Well, not too much. I mean, I was just going to say that's really interesting. I didn't know that from what Jeff said, but I think that's really cool that he did something like that and really just shows, like, how much he's, like, thought about it and planned ahead for the future. And I know I've said that I didn't really think he was going to quit, and maybe, you know, he's just doing it again, because we know in 2011 he was saying he was going to quit all the time too, but the more I'm looking at this one, it does seem like he actually is going to go back to school. And I don't know. We'll have to see. Like, I feel like for someone like him, it's really possible that in a couple of years, he's going to be like he's still going to be relevant. Like, he could come back and potentially, you know, become the best foreigner once again. So I think he is going to, like,
you feel like the fire can't die?
The fire is still.
It's hard. It's hard to know. And Control's like, oh, you can put that shit out.
No, he's done. But I mean, Stefano is not driven by passion and love for the game. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, he says, he spoke to, as you said, Marcus, about like, I created this image that I don't care, but I really do. He does care, absolutely. But you can actually look no further than his last WCS games and see a guy that was much happier on vacation, spending time with friends and family, and moving on with his life. It seems preposterous because I think most people with his fame and success would be like, how could you ever leave that behind? But he's actually a strangely philosophical kind of guy who always has his eye on the real ball, which is a weird thing to say, but like, he enjoyed gaming in the fame, but I would bet you $100 right now that he does not come back. Never comes back.
I'm not saying that it's like he's going to be like, sucked back in because he like can't control his like emotions or whatever. I'm gonna say like it's possible he could come back in like 3 years and like still be one of the best foreigners.
Oh, you're just hypothesizing about a skill?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You want him to come back, Suppy's what?
I would want him to come back. I think he's like a pretty.
He's a natural talent, so I agree with you, Suppy. Like, if he did come back, he'd be very good. Yes, but he won't. It's time you deal with that, Suppy.
Stefano did make mention in his sort of like closing remarks to the community that he learned a lot more than just the game, that he learned a lot about life. And that is one thing about Stefano, is that no matter where he was or what situation he was, he just kind of wanted to live life. If StarCraft was like a part of that, then great. But it always kind of felt like there was another mission that Stefano was always on. So it's actually not surprising, and even more so because we did sort of know this announcement, the whole idea and thought of this was happening and coming. It's interesting to see what will happen just overall. I wish him luck in everything that he does, and I'm sure that we'll still see him occasionally. But I'm also curious real quickly, does anyone think that this affects StarCraft 2 in a negative way? Is it kind of cool that there was a successful player that, you know, had a career and retired, and he can be used as an example of people who have been successful in playing competitive games?
it could maybe be construed as a negative way. I feel like I'm just kind of saddened by the amount of people who are starting to retire recently. We recently had Theognis retire like last week as well. And it's always sad to see more and more people go, but Jeff's making an angry face. I think it is sad that there's a lot of people retiring, but I mean, it's not going to like, people aren't going to stop watching or something like that. Like,
all right.
All right, you go.
Yes, we had Inca and Eve and Theognis retire recently, but I guess part of the reason why I gave the look is because like, each one of those players had their special place in StarCraft, and certainly they deserve the discussion. Theo had a long discussion. Eve was a very important female player, but I feel like it's almost, when we ask the question, when Stefano retires, is that going to have a negative impact on esports? It's almost silly to me to bring up like, well, Inca, Theo, and Eve also retired recently, because not even close to the same thing. I think there is a chance that when Stefano has retired like he has, because his fandom and his excitement that he brings to the game transcends the game itself. Like, there are French people that have gotten into this game because they heard of Stefano, not even through StarCraft, but because of like a newspaper or word of mouth from family members. Like, this is somebody that people talked about. Unfortunately, Theo, Inca, and Eve do not have that effect on StarCraft, or did not have that effect. And then on the other side too, like Stefano is a special brand of StarCraft, right? Like, he was the bad boy, but like bad boy in a weird, cool, hip kind of way. Not like the Idra bad boy where he'll actually say something that's kind of mean, but it's okay because it's him. Stefano didn't really say mean stuff. He just did idiot things that made him like a super awesome bad boy all-star, you know? And those are special people. Those kind of people can't actually be replicated that much. So I saw Scott Smith say this in his tweets, and I actually saw Robert Olin say this too. And he was a much needed spice / like spark in the StarCraft scene, because he brought excitement in different ways that other people did not. So there is a chance that I feel like the excitement and entertainment level and value of StarCraft has declined. I think that void can be filled. I don't think the game's forever worse now because Stefano's gone, but I think it's definitely a monumental moment.
All right. Anyone else have thoughts about, you know, I pretty much agree with a lot of what's been said. Don't know what's going to necessarily happen, but, you know, Stefano, we wish you the best. All right. With that, let's just talk about WCS. As this weekend, fuck, a lot of stuff is happening, you guys. We already talked a little bit about the overlapping a few weeks ago when this was announced. Nothing has changed. It's still going to be batshit crazy with the International 3 happening right on top of three different WCS events. So as we get into it, let's go ahead and talk about Korea first. First beat Supernova to take fifth place in the WCS Korea and secure a spot at the season finals. And this means that First Bomber, Innovation, Rain, and Mario will be the five representatives from Korea. And Innovation was the only repeat season finalist for Korea and Europe. And it's very possible the same will be true for America as well. But one of the most recent games that a lot of people talk about was, of course, the Mario versus Innovation matchups. Just quick, sir, did you guys watch them? I actually did not see them. But I was watching the game in real time over Twitter, especially with some of the predictions that were made, and it was pretty hilarious to see the timeline unfold. But anyone see this game? Have any comments on it? Maybe Xenocide or specifically Artaran?
Yeah, I actually pride myself on knowing probably the most about StarCraft, and I pretty much watch everything related to Terran. So I guess I'll start by saying that I think Innovation could have won all of those games. Like, the builds that he did weren't really greedy. Besides the CC first on Anaconda was kind of a gamble, but a lot of people on forums are saying, like, you know, Innovation, the only reason he wins is because he opens, like, 4 CC before Barracks. But in reality, with a few scouting adjustments in the first three games, he could have won all of them. And the game 4, I feel like Innovation's mindset isn't really good. Like, if he opens a series up with a 2-0, I really don't see him losing. But if he ever opens a series, like, down 0-3, I actually don't see him winning at all. So at that point, his mindset was already broken. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, he just got caught like every single time, and it had some stuff to do with luck. But Mario's builds were really new, and TBT is really volatile right now because Hellbats just got nerfed. And what made Innovation really good wasn't the Hellbat in particular, but basically Innovation's mechanics are so good that if there's like one build in a matchup that's better than the rest and it removes the unpredictability, then Innovation will just grind that one build over and over again and then just outplay people. But that's not the case anymore with the Hellbat nerf.
A lot of people were actually giving Maru some shit, you know, which happens all the time, right? Like if there's a situation, you know, and some, you know, cheesy or super aggro builds are, people will come out and they'll jump on it. In a situation like that, I really felt like it's a play to win, you know, based off of what I heard. Do you as a Terran, like you said, they were all pretty new builds. Like, did you appreciate what Maru brought to the table versus Innovation?
Yeah, I just think that if this match was probably like 2 or 3 weeks down the line, then this wouldn't have happened. But because TBT builds right now are just so weird and nobody knows really everything, I think Maru is really smart. If I was Maru, I definitely would have done the same thing. Like anybody would have, not playing a straight up macro game versus Innovation. Because like I feel like the big thing that separates some Koreans from foreigners is like Koreans play to win, and some foreigners just play not to lose. So Koreans, they just know what they have to do. And if Maru thought that he couldn't win from macroing and he won anyways with all in, then all the power to him.
Yeah, this is something... I caught the games. Oh, go ahead, Sophie. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to briefly mention that this is something we've seen with other players like Flash in Brood War. When he was first making his debut, he opened up with a ton of cheeses and knocked out like a huge tournament favorite. I think he knocked out like Bisou or something with like 2 cheeses in a row. And everybody gave him crap for it, but that's what you have to do. You have to play to win. And that's really what separates like the good players from the great. And that's where we see Flash now. So.
Yeah, I don't know if we should focus too much on it, but I agree. Like there have been people like Maro's just kind of known. He's going to be a lightning rod for being called cheesy anyways, because that's just like how he's known. But I, in particular, don't know that I should ever feel bad about someone cheesing Innovation. Like, Innovation was very outwardly... Right. He very outwardly said, like, if you nerf the Hellbat, you're nerfing me. Like, he was accepting that he was abusing the crap out of a unit that everyone knew was pretty, pretty bad. Like, Innovation would flip the scenario 1,000%, and I think everyone knows that, and he would have done what Maro did if he thought that was the winning strategy, but he just looks at his multitask and micro and probably says, well, that's how I'm going to win. So the longer the game goes, the better chance I have of winning. Maro in the finals is going to play a player that's like the actual definition of solid macro play. Like Rain is ridiculously solid. So it'll be a big test, because I actually like how Koreans play series versus like, like sequential best of ones. I like that they look at a series and they say, okay, this is how I think I can win. And they like cook up a recipe across 4, 5, or 6 games. And I'm excited about that kind of gameplay. I hope it's not a 4-0 one way or the other. Like in the finals, I always want tension. So I'm hoping for a 4-3.
Well, let's talk about it since we're kind of on the topic. It takes place on the 10th. And it will be a part of the giant WCS marathon that happens over the course of this weekend. Any thoughts on this final? I mean, kind of kicking off the conversation with what Jeff said, hope it's not a 4-0 or even a 4-1. Do you think that these guys have the potential to go back and forth? And who is more likely to take the series, in your guys' opinion?
I think the difference between the Korean map pool and in general, the WCS EU and NA map pool is that the Korean map pool has a lot of maps that favor Terran, like Anaconda, Gwangalli Beach, Star Station. All of these maps are like, I'm not sure. They're just like so weird, but they're definitely not Protoss favored or Zerg favored. So if Maru plays to the maps, then I feel like he has a good chance. And I'm sure he can cheese on like some other map. I just don't think that'll be a big stomp, because a lot of these maps, like Anaconda, are just so awkward, and based on how Maru played on versus Innovation, I'm sure you can cheese or maybe even just play straight up versus Rain and still pick off a few games.
Sheppy?
I mean, I'm probably going to go with Rain just because he's kind of like the established player, but you never know. I mean, he just took out Innovation. Mario just took out Innovation 4-0, so I don't really know. I mean, they're not Zerg, so I don't watch their play too much, so I'm not sure.
It's like, I don't care because it's not a Zerg.
I don't care.
Like, that's why I hated this season of GSL, no Zergs.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. I'm a Zerg, and even I'm like, really? You're going to shed those tears? It's been so
I'm happy it's a PVT, for God's sakes. Like, it'll be nice to see if a Protoss can finally win. But I want to go back to something that even Weed said, actually, was just that this is Innovation is the only one in this top five to make a repeat. To me, that speaks volumes to the competition level in Korea, and I think that's really refreshing. Like, I don't know that I would like it. Like, there was a period of time there where Innovation was the joke winner. Like, it was just like, okay, let's see how far, you know, or who could maybe take a game off of Innovation. Granted, it didn't last very long. You know, it's not like we had to deal with that for months and months, but he was that dominant for a period of time. I like that there's some parity now and some challenging going on. I like that there's fucking... Maro's 16 years old, guys. He's like... He's actually a child, and he's going to play for a gigantic wad of cash in front of a massive audience for one of the most important tournaments we have in this freaking game. Like, that's really crazy cool. And then Rain is the guy who came out, like, revolutionized Protoss within, like, the first month of him playing the freaking game. And then he kind of, he disappeared, meaning he, like, didn't win everything for a couple months and instead settled for, like, top 7, top 8. But he's back, and he's got another chance, and I'm excited about that. Like, I like all the storylines that are swirling around this. The one thing that's got me sad, I know that Suppy wants to talk about this in particular, though, is that there's not a lot of Zerg representation. Korea, Europe is looking to have 0 Zergs up there. Could be as many as, like, 7 Protoss. And then NA, of course, Jadong's going to qualify, because that's just the kind of level of badass that he is, and we hope that Scarlet does as well. But can you imagine this global finals with, like, literally 2 Zergs? That would be so silly.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That would be silly. What is the count currently at for EU?
5 for EU.
Oh, my God.
What? No, it's 4 Protoss qualified.
It's 4, but there's a Protoss group with 3, so there's guaranteed.
Yeah, guaranteed 5.
So maybe you won't get a visa. You don't know, Suppy, okay? Maybe, like... I don't know.
Hey,
it's not
going to happen.
I wanted to ask Jeff, Jeff brought up the point where you like that there's the variety of players kind of shifting on the scene, and, you know, there's not one person who's, like, completely unbeatable. But my question is, wasn't it also kind of nice when in Brood War we did have those players who were literally unbeatable, and, like, you can almost always count on them to win, and that in itself is kind of fun to watch too, because you get a lot of, you know, hype around them, and, you know.
Yeah, so here, that's a really good question. I feel like, for me, the reason why that's a little bit different... how do I put this? Like, yes, I do agree with you. It is cool. It's cool when there's a legendary god mode player. And then the story is, like, who stops them? You know, I still get excited about that, but I consider myself kind of a bad judge on that, because I get excited about just about everything StarCraft. But I do like when I see, like... I guess if I had to prefer one over the other, I would still prefer... that instead of Jadong versus Flash in every single finals ever, like there was in Brood War for a long period of time there, I would prefer to have this guy has caught absolutely fucking on fire and came out of nowhere and can people slow him down, or this guy has changed this matchup. You know, I do like the mix, I guess.
It really wasn't until, like, how long into Brood War, the game, was it until, you know, we actually started seeing that dominance?
There was different reigns. There's, like, I Love Oobs, infamous TVZ reign, but he was also winning the other matchups as well. The more modern ones were Flash, Jadong, obviously, but before that, Boxer, Nada. These were guys that were at, like, the
right.
top of the ratings for months and months.
Right.
But as far as years, like, the game got actually competitive, I would say, around 2000. Like, there was some spacesuit matches before that, but nobody really watched them, and, like, replays weren't even available before then. But, like, 2002, 2003 is when the game started getting played for money in a pretty serious level. And nothing, in my opinion, was like, nobody was like super dominant. Sophie's better with the numbers here, but it was a couple years after that. So I guess it took a good 7 years, I guess, the long-winded answer here.
Okay. Now, I'm just, I guess, well, the follow-up question was going to be, like, do you think that every expansion has to be out? And do you think that there still has to be, like, that strong, you know, competitive scene for that to happen? Or do feel like it should be happening now, I guess?
No, the expansions change things up big time. You know, like, everyone agrees that, most part anyways, that Heart of the Swarm is an improvement on Wings of Liberty. But who knows what Legacy of the Void is going to bring. Like, there could be someone really good, but then all of a sudden Legacy of the Void comes out and they add, like, a double boost on the medevac, and that's where it boosts, but then it boosts again and changes time-space continuum, and it can appear anywhere at any time. They could be dropping you when you have 4 SCVs and shit, or 6, I guess. That would be crazy, you know, and that would change the game. So it needs to come out, and then we need to have our one year or 2 year, and then Blizzard needs to take their hands off and say, okay, the game's balanced, we're happy with this, and then all of a sudden you might see those kind of guys, I think.
I think we should bring these suits back. Suppy, I could totally see you playing.
I would actually be totally down to wear one of those. They're sick.
Yeah, right. Then in a best of 12 or 13, you're like, dude, this thing's really hot. I don't like this idea anymore. I didn't think this through.
Suppy's on record as saying he'd like it, so I'm going to see what I can do now.
Yes, please.
We'll get you a gigantic fucking clown suit, EG, just like sparkly blue, and you'll have to, like, it's like a fat suit you'll have to waddle in to, like, okay, guys.
I don't know. I think kind of like just a giant Infestor suit or something.
Yeah.
Or he kind of, like, had limited leg movement, so he'd have to sort of wiggle his self to walk. We got off topic. Let's swing back on topic. EU, we were talking about Protosses, and then we started talking about Dominance, which is a cool topic anyway. But yeah, let's take a look at EU, because there's two groups left to play before this weekend where we'll have even more action going on. But the next two groups, one tomorrow, Naniwa, MMA, Happy, and Tefl, and then Group D, Titan, Vortex, Mana, and MC. That's the one that's going to have three Protoss coming. And wait, God, why do I feel like we – oh, no. We just saw Happy's group, didn't we? Oh, okay, that's right. We just saw Group H recently, I guess. Didn't we see this group already? Am I smoking crack?
You're looking at round of 32. You're looking at round of 32.
Yeah. No, I'm not. It says August 7th, Naniwa, MMA, Happy, and Tefl.
Yeah, that's a different group from Group H, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just Happy's in the same group. Or Happy's in the group.
Yeah, that's the right group, though. That's what's happening tomorrow. I'm sorry. I got mixed up with Ace Rog and all the other shit that's going on. My bad. I was like, I just watched an interview with Happy where he advanced. But Group C, Naniwa, MMA, Happy, and Tefl. Who do you think our final four players are going to be for this WCSEU?
MMA's playing really well. I'd like to see him advance and also add that kind of Korean versus Europe story. But he's also playing really well. But I feel like that group is really tough, because I feel like Happy, Naniwa, and MMA could all deservedly get your votes. And then Tefl is a very good dark horse. Like, he's already earned the Naniwa patent of approval, where he called him the worst player on the planet, which, if you do Naniwa math, actually means the opposite of that. So he thinks he's one of the best players there are. And that means Tefl's dangerous. And I've seen him play a lot recently. Tefl is not like this super juggernaut scary Zerg like a Stefano in his prime, but he is capable of doing anything. Like, he'll do a 3-base all-in, and that makes him a little bit scary in a group like this. And let's not forget, he's the guy that lost 1-2 to MVP, but if he does, like, a couple different things, he actually wins 3-0 in a best of three.
What do you guys think?
Well, I've actually played MMA and Happy and Tefl online. I haven't played on versus Naniwa, but MMA has drastically changed his playstyle from how he used to play. He now plays, like, a lot more gimmicky, I'd say. Happy is probably the most mechanical. And Naniwa says he's been having a lot of trouble in PvT recently, but so I'm not sure about that. But MMA is currently ranked 2 on EU ladder, and he kind of just crushes everybody. So I'd say he's definitely the favorite to make it out. And then I'd have Naniwa after that. But based on Naniwa's current PvT condition, I can see Happy making it out too. But I think Tefl is definitely the dark horse going to that group. I really don't see him beating MMA or Happy, but yeah, it's.
So how long has MMA been in Europe? If he's been playing on Europe,
it's been a while, hasn't he?
Been a while.
I thought so.
I guess. Yeah. After GSTL, I guess he probably just moved there. Everything.
All right. I want to paint a picture. Okay. Two Prodos make it through Group D. And Naniwa also makes it through
to make it
a 7-1. And I guess it, you know, like coin flip between a Terran and a Zerg. Is this like, I mean, maybe for Prodos players, like it's going to be the greatest thing ever. But will that affect viewership? Because that's crazy. I can't even remember the last time we had a tournament. I think probably the last time there was some Zerg-heavy tournaments.
Yeah.
Where we were all, like, hoping that one Prodos would make it through, but then it just ended up being four Zergs. What do you guys think if that happens? I know all hypothetical, of course, but what do
they
you
think? They already have the international that's going to drag some of the numbers down. But if you look at a bracket and it's, like, four PvPs in a row, and, well, I mean, it's going to hurt viewership. It's just not going to be as interesting. I still think ESL will have a successful weekend, though, for their – I think they'll be okay.
You know what's funny, though? I think if 7 Protoss advance and MMA advance, I'd still take a Terran to win the entire thing. Because
that would
actually
make so awesome.
the advantage that you get when you play like in a group and everybody else is Protoss, that's so easy to prepare for. And I don't know. MMA is already so good. I have no idea.
Yep. 7 Protoss and a Terran walk into a bar.
Dude, that might be a worthy storyline.
Yeah, if that actually happens, I think viewership would actually be pretty high.
But then you know what happens when the Terran finally gets eliminated. Like,
I watched, what was it? Like, Grubby versus Ossuobs, and those are some pretty sick games.
That actually was pretty. Promised me that every game was going to be as fucking batshit crazy as that one, I'd be in.
Turned out cool, but I agree with what you're suggesting. I do think if everyone looked at it and it was all one race in the tournament, people would turn it off. They just would. They'd be like, you know what? Maybe I will check out the international, and you'll lose several thousand.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's all hypothetical. It's to be determined over the next couple of days, but good luck to the remaining 8 competitors in the groups. Also, some up and downs are being played as well. And it should be noted that Welmu and DuckDuck did advance to round of 8 over Lucefron and Stefano. Of course, we talked about Stefano, but even Lucefron being eliminated, fairly unexpected results across the board. So all 5 season finalists from last season for Europe are out. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I actually just casted Lucefron last night in SC2L, and someone posted in the thread or tweeted me, I can't remember which, but they said that since July, Lucefron is 11-16 against Prodos, so he's definitely struggling. And then I watched the games against DuckDuck in particular, and I mean, it's tough because with DuckDuck's style, you're going to look silly or you're going to look like super better than them because he's just such a cheesy Prodos. It's ridiculous. But Lucefron played pretty greedy in both the games that he played against him and ended up getting bopped for it kind of hard.
Game 3 was super, super close.
Yeah, actually, like, I'd say game 3 was lost purely because Lucefron like gave away 2 medivacs of units to kill 1 Colossus, which can be good, but when you go for like 5 racks, you can't lose anything in those first 2 medivacs.
Yeah.
And then you just pull your SUVs and you have like a big mass, but like his army was just like weaker than it should have been, I feel like.
It was crazy. When he first started plowing through and then picking off the pylons, powering all the gateways, I was like, because I almost never see that SCV pull work. Of course it does, because Terrans do it all the time, but I just don't really see it that often. But it looked like a very clear Lucefron win, but a pretty damn good hold. So I actually probably should pay a little bit more respect than I gave. I thought DuckDuck really earned that third game. Like, he played it very well. But like the 3 gateway timing that just kind of accidentally beat Lucefron, that one made me cringe a little bit because it was like, oh, geez.
Just a little bit. Anyway, 2 more groups tomorrow, the next day. Then, of course, WCS finals. I had them up here. Did I close them? Yeah, so just for those that were asking in the channel as well, the WCS Korean Premier League Season 2 Finals will kick everything off for the weekend. And then WCS Europe begins. And then WCS America begins. And then it keeps going from there, right?
And then?
Yes.
And then?
And then it just keeps going. Until.
Yeah. Has it? Do any of you guys actually have? I think it is just like we just said, right? It's just like one after the other after the other.
Yeah, there will be breaks because technically the Korea event is only on the first day.
Okay.
Right. So it kicks it off. That's on Friday, right? So Friday night. I'm looking through. Yes.
I'm gonna hold myself back. I know we bitched about this a whole bunch already, so there's no reason to go back
into
it.
Yeah. Like. It'll be going all day. Let's talk about WCS America a little bit. The round of 16 is underway.
Let's dive into that first group.
Dive in, man.
EG,
do it.
I mean, what do you guys think of the results? I thought they were pretty fantastic.
Well, I mean, you know, considering that Violet didn't show up, so that kind of helped out a little bit.
It helped a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
To be honest, like Jadong took care of business. It was nice to see him 4-0. Like his ZVP showed there a little bit, beating Oz the way he did. And we've seen that from Jadong. So hopefully that's the kind of Jadong that's here, is where he can beat an Oz caliber Protoss, because he's beaten Oz caliber Protosses, and then he's not attacked three Colossus that were by themselves in the middle of the map that he can totally easily kill. Anyways, at Aim Shanghai. And then I was proud of Oz because he actually called shot. You know, I can hit a home run on this. Like you said, I don't lose PBT. And that gets a little bit worrisome because, like, just before that, Ryung was like, I'm going to easily win this group. I don't fear anyone. But then gets 0-4'd. Or maybe he took a game off of Oz. Anyways, but Oz looked really good in his PBT. So I thought the interesting part about that group was Violet getting disqualified again, actually. I'm being serious. Like, I think that's weird that Season 1, he qualifies, doesn't get a visa because, like, when they went to apply, someone sat across from him and was like, no, you can't come back into this country. And he's like, please. And they're like, no, no. And then next season rolls around, like, 2 months later.
Because he qualified qualified online, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's actually, I mean, there's certainly some controversy around it where it's already, you know, it's already kind of, especially with the gym and the MaxEd visa issues, there was the potential of those individuals not being able to be there. And then for the fact that it was like a repeat for Violet, like, I love Violet and you know, would have loved to see him play here. But yeah, I think there is something to be said about the folks that are like, how many times can this happen before you're kind of told, like, it can't happen again? And I don't know what sort of problems exist already, but it could be a forced decision, you know, because it does suck that one person's down when there are a lot of very capable individuals that could have filled that spot.
I think it needs to be looked at much closer because Violet's good enough and he's still going to be in the WCS NA that season 3, he fucking qualifies again. And then it's just another group that has a free win in it. And, like, look, we benefited from this. I mean, Oz versus Violet, that's not a guaranteed Oz win. That's a really scary matchup for him. Violet is deadly there. I think Jadong is favored ZVZ, but again, that complicates things. But with him losing, Oz has a super easy time qualifying. He just has to beat Ryung. I mean, that's a cakewalk group. So I don't want that to continue to happen. I think it's different than the Jim Maxed issue because that's, like, you can't plan for that. You don't go, well, since I'm from China, I guess I won't play internationally. And the proof's in the pudding because they actually did get their visas. So
right.
It was scary and it required, you know, didn't require, but community effort was there. So you don't, like, look at that and say, well, Chinese players, we're not going to invite you because there's a chance you don't come out. You take that risk. But with Violet, I hope his manager and Violet, you know, and whoever's kind of conducting his business, they look at this and they say, let's be real. Let's start working on it now, and if it looks like we're getting somewhere, then let's get you qualified. But if it's not, you know, we got to make a tough call here.
Or just, like, start trying to compete in another region. And I don't know how that works.
That's where it gets sticky. You know? Yeah, I don't know if you can switch regions. Like, there's a...
I mean, I know you can. Until 2014. now. Like, it's too late to switch.
It has been locked in then, yeah, because it was like it was after the first season, technically?
Something like that. I don't know. It gets complicated there a little bit.
Let me... According to the Blizzard bylaws, on page number 70... No, I'm sorry, 157, subsection 12. I don't know.
Is that a Diablo 3 comic book?
No.
No?
It's a Dark Heresy core rule book, suppy. Oh, gosh.
Nice.
Get with it, dude.
I've got my white dwarf right here, too. There We're both doing the same kind of thing.
Look at that. Look at that. Group E, which is live right now. Currently, I believe that the first match has already taken place, Alive versus DaMuslim. DaMuslim lost to Alive 2-0, and now we have Tasia versus Minigun. Minigun, the sole Protoss there amongst all those very scary Terrans. Obviously, I'm sure, Jeff, you'd love to see Alive and DaMuslim come out of there. I'm just taking a wild stab there. But since there's so much Terran here, I'm actually going to ask Xenocider what he thinks about Group B.
Alive, Tasia make it out, probably. Foreigner's probably gonna get 2-0'd. That would be my money prediction. Maybe I think DaMuslim beats Minigun, and that's about it.
You're not old enough to gamble, Lebo. It's actually illegal for you.
Maybe in China, right? Maybe.
Everything's legal in China. You could be working it if you wanted. Get you a job in China.
Oh my god.
And Tasia's...
Shit, you're 10 years late. What are you doing? You could have a job in China 10 years ago.
Tasia's up 1-0 right now over Minigun.
It's a good game, though. Minigun played really well. He's been doing this Phoenix Colossus thing, which is kind of cute. And it didn't work out that well, but it was good.
The Phoenix Colossus style is really, really popular in Korea. Mm. Especially, like, Jim is the one, I guess, who kind of... I don't actually know about that, but he uses it a lot. And... I feel like it's really like not known about in the foreigner scene. So if any foreign Terran player plays Minigun, he has no idea how to play against it and loses. But I think every Korean Terran just about knows how to deal with it. And I've actually seen Tasia beat Jim, who is like the guy that uses this style pretty much every game to a T. And so I really don't see Minigun pulling it out versus Tasia. Although Minigun is actually really unpredictable. He's got a lot of weird builds, having played against him, so I think maybe he can take this next game on Neoplanet.
Yeah, Tasia looked like he knew how to face it. He simply just made more Vikings.
Yeah.
Vikings are pretty good.
I'm going to keep my eye on you, Lebo. You're trying to make Terran players sound way more sophisticated than they are. They're like, the progression of Terran builds. Let me go to my board over here. In Wings of Liberty, we started off with Marine Marauder Medivac, and then we added some Vikings. And you'll see them in the progression here. That's actually all we fucking do. And Protoss has done a lot of different stuff, and we added Ghosts in the year 2010. Yep, it's right there as well. That's a 20-minute tech, though. Nobody opens Ghosts. That's stupid. You open Vikings.
Never once did anyone open Ghosts.
I think the most interesting part of that group for me is seeing DaMuslim. Like, I feel like he's such a beast online, and you could see that, like, he destroyed his round of 32 group, which was online. But, like, I think there's just something about live events that's, like, really, really, like, nerve-wracking for him, or he has nerve issues or something. But I really want to see him do well at, you know, a live event so he can sort of get over that. I think, like, if this was a group that was online, he actually has, like, a solid shot at making it out, but I don't know. Like, something about live events for DaMuslim is what really screws him over.
I know Ben sometimes says he doesn't have nerve issues, but like when I compare his play at MOG to like his play online, I just like, I don't know. Sometimes like versus the Ognis at MOG, he got supply blocked for like 2 minutes, and that kind of showed. Like, it just when he played versus Alive, like he just makes mistakes that he doesn't on ladder or in online in general. And I don't know, I guess it just doesn't really translate to the offline for him specifically.
Yeah, he's in my opinion, he's the most mental player I've ever encountered in my life. Like, and I've encountered a lot of these guys even back in Brood War days where, like, when you practice with them, they are ungodly good because there's no pressure at all. And they're in their absolute comfort zone, and they know that there's nothing really at stake except for, you know, pride and the desire to win. And DaMuslim's one of those guys where, in practice, he just doesn't drop games to, like, anyone. He actually just smashes everybody. But then when it comes to tournaments and that success and that expectation and then all the other stuff that gets in the way clouds their brains and they become different people. That's why we've been working on Ben for a long time, and he's been working hard too. Like, not to somehow, you know, take the credit for it or something like that. He's been working on this a long time, but like, it used to be way worse, if you can imagine. We would go to tournaments and he would like drop a game to a guy, and this was like the demuslim. He'd be like, the chair's wobbly. I can feel that. Yeah, it's wobbly. Is the chair wobbly? Does it wobble? And then he'd pick up the mouse and he'd drop it and he'd be like, feels different. The weight's off. Something maybe on the airplane did something to the mouse. Probably the pressure. The pressure up in the air. And every time we'd all like roll our eyes and be like, Ben, no, like fucking focus, man. Like, you're playing, you know, you can beat this guy. And he's like, nah, chair's wobbly. It hurts my elbow. I don't know why, but I can feel it right there in the elbow. And that makes my fingers not move. Can I go home now? And he worked on that. But now what happens when he goes to tournaments is like the same kind of thing always manifests, but in a different place. Like with this one, he wasn't able to get like a practice computer in time. And a large part of that's because he's moving just before this tournament and shit like that. But I'm going to be honest with you, like, if you need to practice, you can grab life by the throat and throttle it. You'll get a computer, you know? Or even if you don't, you go into it and you work on your mindset and tell yourself the practice that you do get is all you need because you're a champion, you kick ass. Ben doesn't tell him those things. Like, I actually watched the interview before his match against Alive.
Yeah,
like,
oh my God.
He's like, no, I didn't think I was going to win the last group. I thought I was going to lose, and in this group, I don't know. They're all better than me. I don't think so. And it's like,
I was talking and he was like, yeah, I mean, you can either be really confident like Spano and like not give a fuck, or you can like be really down on yourself and also not give a fuck. But I'm like, I don't think that actually works.
Yeah.
Lebo crawled from the womb 15 years ago and has been educated on this. Like, that is correct. When he said that, I cringed, and it's like, no, you don't have to have Stefano confidence or be like completely down on yourself. Those aren't the two choices. So this, you know, the bottom line is I agree with everything Suppy and Lebo said. Like, he has work to do, but he's this cool, like, Keanu Reeves type character where when he does figure out that he can stop bullets and jump inside of men, he's going to jump inside of some agents and blow them up from the inside out, man. That guy's good. Like,
he's
going
to jump inside some Asians? I don't know what you're trying
Wait.
To...
Get your mind off of Asian people. Agents.
Well, he's still got some games to play, so we'll see. Let's talk real quickly about the other two groups that are going to be playing tomorrow and the following day. Those include Revival Sage, Max Zed, Scarlet, and then Group D, Jim, Alicia, Polt, and Crank. Anyone want to throw some predictions out there real quick?
Okay. Let's see Jim and Polt, and... I'm going to say Revival, actually. Revival and...
Whoa!
Revival and Scarlet, dude. Yeah, I'm going to call it.
Whoa, like that's a crazy prediction. Suppy, do you predict Revival
exactly
to win?
That's exactly what I would say.
That's so weird. Yeah. I, too, predict Revival to
win. Oh, shit.
But seriously, I do hope, because Jim is a really good player, not to jump on the hype train too terribly bad, but... who beat him last time in WCS?
Scarlet? Didn't she?
You got beat her by like
challenge.
Yes.
Yeah. I know the one thing in Korean ladder is like top 16 right now is basically all Protoss, and Jim's PvP is like next level. Like, his PvZ is really gimmicky, but his PvP is like, it looks unlosable basically. So it's a good thing for him that he has no Zergs in his group.
We'll see.
You look at the match histories of the Protoss too, Lebo?
No, man. I just know who the barcodes are, dude. I've got the inside intel.
All right. Season finals at Gamescom? What?
We have to mention Grubby at WCS.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah,
if we
never
don't,
did.
6 out of 10 of the top 10 Reddit threads will literally come
you're
down
right,
and
you're
tell
right.
you that
and
you're an asshole.
And kittens will die as well. And kittens will die. I don't.
Did either of you guys see one of the 26 videos of him crying that are on Reddit?
Yes.
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 I have nothing. I mean, it's cool. He had emotion, but...
Oh.
Yeah, I got nothing on it.
I thought you didn't really want to talk about it. I was just
We have to admit, like, he played really well. That part's really cool. Like the Hasuobs Grubby PvP was literally one of the best PvP best of threes I've seen ever. Not necessarily because they both played perfectly, and that's like always needs to be mentioned. But it's like it was exciting and so back and forth. And two games were 45 minutes plus, and the last game, which was shorter, was still exciting because it was very micro oriented, really cool strategy. So it was hats off to both of them. Grubby ends up falling from that though, and that's the first series, which in this system is really hard because then you have to win two in a row against really good players. And he fucking beats MVP. And then who was the other guy he beat? Someone, I'm blanking on this.
Rhett?
Yeah, Rhett. The Rhett one's funny because that one to me like kind of makes this a little bit silly because Grubby always beats Rhett. He's like so far in his brain it's not even funny. Every strategy he does against Rhett like starts sweating and shaking. He's like, Grubby's gonna beat me again. But when he beat MVP and the way he beat MVP, straight up awesome games. That was some Six City stuff. I liked it.
Actually, what really interests me about Grubby, and it shows that he's like a RTS pro, is that like when he's behind, he doesn't like just try to stick with his plan and then like just keep playing from behind. Like when I was watching his game versus Hasuobs, like when he was behind, he took a third Nexus, and even though like that's extremely risky, he was already behind. Like there's no way he was gonna win if he just played straight up. And I feel like for an amateur like me, or for like a lot of players in general, when we get behind, we're just like, well, if we just keep doing what we regularly do, then maybe magically we'll just get a lead somewhere. But I feel like whenever I watch Grubby play, whenever he's behind, he like tries to take leads wherever he can, even if it's risky, because he knows he has to do something or else he's just going to lose the game straight up. So that was definitely one of the most impressive things I saw from him. I figured from like watching so many Koreans play that I felt like the best way was just play so much that you don't care about the game anymore and like have no emotions whatsoever, just become like a robot. But I was actually pretty surprised to see some emotion. I haven't, like, sometimes I watch like Lucifron or like Duck Yacht just like win a game and they take off their headset and then like
they're stone cold. Yeah, well, I mean,
and then just like
Grubby's story in general is just, it's amazing, you know. Like, there's not that many successful and proven pro gamers out there that have successfully even switched games. You know, like, we do see folks, like, genre, or not necessarily genre hop, but, like, they're, you know, they play an FPS and then they play another FPS or an RTS and another RTS. But, you know, Grubby was, like, he would be argued to be, like, one of the better players that ever played Warcraft 3. And, you know, whether or not you actually can argue he's one of the best to play Starcraft 2, maybe not, but he has some very, you know, impressive accolades and accomplishments. And you know, I'm a sucker for guy's wife who supports him and all that shit, because obviously my wife supports the hell out of me. And so that really hits home as like the older fandom or older, you know, generation of fans. I like that shit. That was good. I can't say that I was crying or tearing up or anything, but I was like, good shit, man.
It is good,
good shit.
Good shit. Good emotion.
It was. All right. Since last time I Am Shanghai happened, I know you can't let us not talk
about
that.
That was a great tournament. That was an excellent
tournament.
Tournament.
Can we spend, what do we got? We got 45 more minutes. Let's just end on this,
actually. Well, Oz and Revival kind of thumping Oz in the finals 4-0, score-wise anyway. I did not get to watch as much of this as I would have liked due to the time frame, and that is just like the bane of every Chinese event that ever happens. It's just, for whatever reason, it's always awkward. But yeah. You guys watch it? Any comments about the finals match or any other matches that took place throughout the competition?
Yeah, I watched a lot of it to counteract the EG fanboyism that would naturally occur right now. I did think it was kind of funny, because we don't experience this very often, but when there was two EG guys in the finals, I actually didn't really give a shit as much. They were unexciting finals for me, because it's like, well, I want Revival to win, and I want Oz to win. They both haven't won one yet.
The curse gets nullified, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
that's like, it's okay. But I guess the most exciting thing for me that I really enjoyed was This was not a good tournament for Jadong, not by his standards anyways. But I had a really good time cheering for him, and he had that close ZVP series where he ended up he did end up falling, actually, to MC. And that game on Star Station was absolutely fucking nuts. Like, there was so many times, because Anna was in the other room, where I'm like, he did it! He did it, honey! Jadong won! This is great! And then I'm like, well, MC's holding it. Hang on. Not yet. And then later just got quiet, and she's like, did Jadong win? And I'm like,
go back to your room, Anna.
It was very upsetting. But I like that the game invoked that kind of emotion. It was a fun back-and-forth series.
Nice. I actually was really surprised that Revival beat Holt, because if he didn't do that, I'd say he was a favorite to win the tournament. I'm not really sure what happened in Game 5 because the stream just died. But
oh, yeah, that's
I hope nothing like crazy epic happened in that game, because it was really tense. And they were like, oh, yeah, this game's not going to be streamed. I was like, oh, yeah.
They had problems throughout, I would just say, right? Like, in Carmack actually posted saying they've ran an event from China Joy before, so his expectations were that they were going to be totally fine. I think, unfortunately for him, the StarCraft II community at this point in time has to look at events in China as, like,
the
why the shit? Why are you there? Yeah. What are you doing?
It's not... it doesn't have a great track record, guys, so it is kind of confusing. And no, like, having done events in China before, like, I know that shit's not easy, so I always question, like, why would they put themselves through that time and time again?
Everyone wants that Chinese market, I think, is what it is.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, I want things to get better, but, you know, when I keep getting spoon-fed shit,
yeah,
I'm going to, you know, the next time it's pudding, I'm still going to be like, what are you trying to feed me, man?
Is it shit, though?
Like, I don't know. You tell me it's sweet.
No,
it still
it's tapioca.
Looks like shit.
Why is it brown?
And then also that we had the Asus ROG Summer 2013, which always, for some reason, always is pretty... good event game-wise. Also had some of the most fucking awkward interviews from Semler that I have ever seen.
Oh,
in
my God.
You gonna straight call Semler out like that?
Fuck yeah, I am, dude. That shit was fucking whack, dude. Whack. And I know, like, there was some times I was watching where I'm like, there must be some production shit going on that we don't know about, because this stuff isn't normal. Like, you know, either Semler's possessed or some shit's fucking broken over there. But even like when the finals, it went down for the finals, and then there was like the hour, and then they came back, and there was like a 5-second delay on the audio, and then Semler was doing his thing up on stage, and I'm sure he had a few drinks in him. Like, dude, frankly, it was some weird shit for sure.
I didn't see it firsthand, and I've worked with Summer before, so I'll say this. I think you might be on the money where, like, maybe a guy was, like, screaming in his ear, like the producer or something like that. Or, you know when sound isn't quite working, but you're supposed to host or commentate anyways? Like there's people in the chat like, can't hear you! 5-second delay! 5 seconds! But you're supposed to still talk, so you're like, well, if you can hear me right now.
The Happy interview. That's one of the ones I was talking about. And when we were talking about Happy early, I got so sort of discombobulated and didn't even know where I was for a second. It was because I was thinking about that interview. And, like, there's this moment where he's like, it almost felt like one of your extended series. Like, it was almost trying to be fucking goofy, but it wasn't, where there was just like, so Happy. Like, Happy looking off into fucking nowhere, like, similar, like, so... Good games. Oh. How do you...
Wait, so then it was Happy's fault, or was it...
How do you feel? What? No, I don't... Dude, I never blame a guest for any sort of issue. Like, it can't be Happy's fault when he was just asked to sit down and talk into a microphone. If there's a link out there, please share it. I will...
Yeah.
It is fucking hilarious. Oh, there had to have been something, but it was just hilarious.
I did an interview with him last year in Assembly, and I thought it went really well.
Yeah, he's good normally. I heard from a few different people that this one was a little bit rough for him, so he'll have another shot, and he'll do better, for sure.
But the event, someone saying how they pick groups Did I miss something about that? Was there some like controversy?
They just like put cards down and then like some guy shuffled it. Like it was like hand done, so it was kind of weird.
Hmm. Didn't they like swap it after?
Yeah. They just took cards and like shuffled them around.
Is that like were people calling shenanigans?
No, I don't think so. Although they kind of screwed up the group stage actually, because like nothing similar knew how it worked. So TLO got put in like group one, and then but in actuality, if they had done it right the first time, he would have been in group three. But then they did it again, and then he got in group one again. So he kind of got screwed there. But I don't think that was too big of a deal.
What did you guys think of the best of five format, where like each of the matches was like? Was it?
It's very player friendly. It's very player friendly, I would say. Most players would prefer to play a best of five because they feel like they control their destiny that way. But I did feel like it dragged. It like the Asus ROG broadcast time. I don't know the numbers, so maybe I'm just flat out wrong on this, but it felt like it extended the tournament a lot. Like it was a long tournament.
Which wasn't terrible, but maybe we just saw less games as a result. So, I mean, that was noticeable for sure. There was a lot of games you never even saw.
Yeah, I saw TB complaining about that. He sent Alicia, and I don't think Alicia got streamed until, like, the match he lost, actually.
Oh, wow.
But, again, don't quote me on that, because that's... I think that might be the case, but it wasn't... I'm not for sure. But I did... When I did tune in the games I watched, I will say this. I liked the production when it was when it was working from Asus ROG. I liked how they kind of zoomed in on the player camera, so that was kind of a cute touch.
Yeah, dude, it's cool shit. Some original stuff.
And... You know, let's give credit where credit's due. They're the first tournament, too, to ever since Greg has retired from competitive play and gone into commentating. They were the first ones to get him, and no surprise here. Like, this is why I made, like, one, like, I shouldn't have done it because it's like dipping your toe in piranha-infested water, but I made a joke about this because it's so funny to me. Because this is not Greg's first time commentating. He's actually always been a fucking amazing analytical commentator.
Right.
But with the way our community is, and not really our community, but just the way the internet works, I guess, there's still countless thousands of people that have never heard him broadcast over the last couple of years. So they only have like the snippet of his personality and they're like, oh, he's commentating. He'll probably call everyone a dick and tell them to fuck off. And that's what he'll do for the whole commentary. And then they're like, wait a second. He has really good analysis. He's cordial. He's laughing. He's giggling. Greg's giggling. He giggled. And then like that just blew people's minds and they really enjoyed him. So that didn't shock me at all because I've commentated with Greg and I know he's an amazing commentator.
Yeah, that didn't shock me either.
But it was funny, like seeing the reactions of like, "Dae IMO is Greg is one of the best commentators there is." Like, I think Greg like benefits from the like the really negative expectation people generically would have of him, only to be like super fucking shocked when it turns out that Greg is actually not like that when he commentates. It was weird.
No, they did a good job. I really enjoyed it. Tasia, what?
I imagine he'd only be like that, like when he loses games, like and gets angry with himself or his opponent. I mean, like I don't think there are any people that are legitimately just mad all the time or something. Watching the game and actually hating people.
The nice thing is that the Idris still shines through. Like there was one game, and I think it might have been Stardust versus Hyun. Where Stardust had like a pretty nasty attack, and Greg was like, you know, I think that Hyun's going to be able to hold this off, and it wasn't really the case. And Greg goes, "That's actually disgusting." Like that's and I was like, for that moment, I'm like, "There's Greg." Like that was disgusting, dude. Like you say,
Did you watch the games Lucifron versus Ghost User Game 3? That was like. An hour and a half long.
Oh my god!
You could hear in that game too. Definitely. Now that you bring it up, I remember.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. It's like I was like,
Greg's one of my favorite people, man. Like, we every time we go to a movie or hang out here, we'll be out, and he's one of like the big names in StarCraft. Like people that don't actually watch StarCraft at all know who Greg is. And I was there for one of these. We're at the movie, and a guy walked out, and he's like, and like walked away. Then he came back, and he's like. And he's right in front of Greg too. Like this is not a guy over there that I noticed. He's like in front of Greg. And he's like, "Are you Idra?" And he's like, Yep, I'm Idra. And he's like,
I'm Idra.
Aren't you, you're kind of known for being like really mad and kind of a dick, right? And Greg looks at him and he's like, I suppose. Yeah, I'm known for that. And he's like, it's like, my friend is like a big fan of yours. And that's my other favorite one, is that no one's actually a fan of anyone. It's always their friend. And he's like, I just, it's really... And then he just like kind of like mumbled and walked away. And Greg and I just looked at each other and I go, Greg, I like that you don't save them, by the way. That's my favorite part about Greg. Greg doesn't throw a fucking life raft to a guy that can't find words. Greg just sits there
and stares into their soul. Just like, like, wait, I don't. Is he going to get mad at me? Like, what? What am I doing? What in the actual?
And Greg will let the silence just like solidify into a cloud of awkward, just permeates off of both of them. And when that happens for me, I'm like, so what brings you here? What are you excited about? You know, like, it's so cool to meet you, man. Like, I put it out there, but Greg will just go.
I'm enjoying watching you burn. That's awesome. Tayshia wins.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think like the NA community like just hates Ghost User or something. I don't understand.
Why?
This is like the second time that he's like completely owned a tournament as an American where like literally nobody else does. And I don't know. I don't really think that like Reddit, et cetera, actually care.
You want to know why? This is actually an interesting discussion to have because I agree with you. He's, as far as straight up American players go, he's one of the best performing players of the last, I don't know, at least since he moved to France, certainly in Heart of the Swarm, he's turned out amazing results. Iron Squid comes to mind where he narrowly loses to Life after being ahead 2-0 in a best of 5. Or maybe it was 3-0 in a best of 7. Either way, he's got amazing results out there, but he's a good example of a guy who kind of early on, the only thing he was not known for was very publicly complaining and whining and being kind of a jerk to people. And I say this as a friend of his. I consider him a friend. Like, I talk to the guy a lot. But that was his persona. Then he got good, was aware of that being his persona, so he worked against it. He became more friendly. He did interviews. He, again, with his results, like he was just more silently a better playing player. But one of the problems with the NA server that I think a lot of people would, not necessarily the server, but the scene, is that unless you're winning tournaments, like actually crushing an MLG or DreamHack or fucking whatever, you can place really highly and people will talk about you for that week and then you're forgotten and people are kind of mean about that. Like, that doesn't really earn you anything. But if you're a personality and you bring some excitement and you bring a fan base for something that you do outside the game or inside the game, but, you know, not in terms of results, then that actually lasts longer than taking like fourth place at a really good tournament. So there's a lot of salty pro gamers out there that are like, I'm really fucking good, but I can't speak publicly very well. Why do I not get recognition for this? And I would say Ghost User is like almost the poster boy of that. He does not necessarily give a fascinating interview. He doesn't have a great stream when he ever streams. And I don't see a reason why people are attracted to him outside of his results. And because he doesn't win tournaments, he doesn't get that attention. And that's real talk, son. That's real talk.
I'd love to hear what Xenocider and Suppy have to think about those comments. I have my own thoughts, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm actually going to agree with Jeff. It's basically like, if you want Reddit to like you, there's actually a really easy formula of how you want to talk and how you want to portray yourself, and like, and then everybody will love you pretty much. I'm not really sure about Team Liquid because I don't ever browse Team Liquid, and some people just don't do it. Like, they just don't talk to Reddit. They don't actually, I don't know if he doesn't care or like he just doesn't bother to, but yeah. So some people, I guess, don't know about that. But in terms of actual skill, like, people, when he beat MVP, or I don't know if he actually beat him or it was close, but everybody was just like, oh my God, Pats are whatever. And then like he's winning at ZVZs, and then oh, well, ZVZ's a lucky matchup. And now in Heart of the Swarm, he's like completely owning tournaments, and it's like, well, I just hate him as a person. Like, I don't know.
Really... They were like, people were like, oh, he had an easy bracket or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, well, like that. I really just don't think people understand just how hard it is. Because, like, on Korean ladder, there's, like, a really, really, really high skill cap. But on any ladder and EU ladder, not really so much. So once you're on the top, it's kind of hard to get better. And the little bit better that you need to get is what gets you those round of eights, which he's been doing, which is that really impressed me. So, yeah,
he's an impressive player. He's very good. I don't think anyone should ever say otherwise. I mean, we could just let the results speak for themselves. He's beat Polt several times, and not just like on ladder. He's beat Polt. I'm talking in tournaments, offline. You know, really good results. But it's actually true. Like, Greg actually kind of got fired for basically saying the worst way to say this, but it's like results are almost like secondary to your success in StarCraft. That's a really harsh, pessimistic way to look at it, because certainly there's winners that are getting rewarded for that. But it's so much harder to be the winner that this community expects to give you that respect than it is to just be an attractive personality. You know what I mean? Like, if a weird player, like, if I were to take third in a tournament, shut down the universe. We would talk, you know, people, like, Reddit would have 400 threads about it for, like, 5 months.
Oh, my God.
But if Naniwa takes third, what happened to Naniwa? That was weird. I thought I was going to go to the finals that term, you know, and, like, that's the different expectation, of course, and that makes sense for a lot of people. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is my personality carries me with insurance much further than players that don't feature personality, don't care about personality, or don't have one, and instead focus only on winning. It's much more brutal for them. It's harder. And I'm not saying this as, like, I'm better than them, because I'm not. I'm just saying this is, like, that's the harsh reality of attention in StarCraft.
I just want to clarify that, like, even though we've been saying that it seems like Ghost User doesn't have any personality, he actually is, like, has a lot of personality and is really hilarious. Like, sometimes I bring him on stream on a Skype call, and he's just really, really funny guy. But he doesn't really necessarily make it, like, known to everybody else. So I think that's the big problem. So it's not, we're not saying that he's, like, one of those, like, faceless, like, no character person. But he's actually one of my close friends, and I don't know. He's a really funny guy. So.
There's definitely. I'm just gonna add. You know, I don't know how you fix that, right? Because there's just some people, like, we see. I'm gonna be a part of a show, or I'm gonna do this, or, you know, I'm gonna stream a little bit more. It is like a hard thing to do, because for some people they've just kind of, like, fallen into it. For others, they've gone out and they've made a big effort to, you know, it reinforce that side. So no one's really, like, written a book that's like, here's how you just make it happen. But it is kind of unfortunate that, like, raw skill sometimes doesn't always just translate to, like, that's why I like that guy. Sometimes it does, but it seems like in a lot of these cases, not necessarily the case.
I would say you're spot on when talking about the large scale fans, like the hardcore people, the people that post in these threads on Team Liquid and Reddit. Well, not even necessarily all of them, but the really hardcore fans, they actually do appreciate skill. There's people of players that are, they're like, I just like that they win in the way they play. But we're talking about the masses. So, like, Suppy was a good example of this. He's like, when I'm on Skype with him, he's a really funny guy. He's nice and he makes good jokes. But the rest of the universe never sees that stuff. And that's actually right. What we're talking about is that right. His team, himself, whoever you want to blame, he is not known as a funny guy with a great personality. And nobody will make that argument. But Suppy felt like he needed to because he's there on the NA Zerg friend chat. What do you guys call yourself?
I appreciate that.
The Zerg elitist group, dude.
Yeah. The Zerg elitist group.
Zerg Illuminati.
No.
They're definitely the Zerg Illuminati.
It is not the Zerg elitist group.
Dude, you know, if you want to get into the Zerg elitist chat, like, you have to get subject to, like, a vote, and then they don't tell you who votes against you.
How do you know this?
You got denied, didn't you?
No, because Theo. Okay, so this is what happened. Theognis basically applied for the Zerg elitist Skype chat, and he got denied. And then he invited, like, every Terran in North America, and he's like, man, fuck the Zerg Skype chat. We're making our own.
You guys are the reason he retired, aren't you, Suppy? Oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Jeez.
We are not.
Hey, Lebo, I want you to know you could be in my chat if I had one. I would let you in.
Me too. Me too, Jeff. Wow.
We encourage diversity. We have Major in our chat. So it's all Zergs.
Really?
So, and then, yeah, it's very diverse.
Joke? I don't like it. I don't like it, Suppy.
The Zerg Illuminati, man. It's you. we're going to open up the phone lines. And I think while we do, there's some other stuff that that kind of happened. But let's go ahead and give this a shot. As we did test it earlier. Hopefully, shit still works from last time. But you can give us a telephone call, 909-581-8509. Or you can Skype if you are amongst the elite few that can figure that out. You guys are pretty smart. We also had... Actually, you know what? Before I talk, let's go ahead and just take our first call. Hopefully, they'll line up today. We're going to take area code 580. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, CJ Weed. Well, I just want to say, hey, Suppy, good luck at tonight's Hong Kong Esports 10A qualifiers. I remember you guys talking about Maruch a little bit earlier. I wanted to say that he's basically some underseen talent. I casted him at last year's Asia StarCraft League. It's just an all-online event, but you guys in chat can find it on Liquipedia. He won first prize. He's mostly double proxies, double proxy racks to beat Zerg and so on. But I got a legit question for you guys, and this one, I don't know, it's driving me nuts. How do I convince someone to actually send me to, an offline StarCraft II event in China to, say, be an English caster, an interviewer, a personality, that kind of thing?
How do you convince someone to spend several thousand dollars to send you somewhere to go do interviews or commentate?
Well, here's the thing. Next semester I'm going to Korea, so that only turns into about a couple $100.
Well, I mean, honestly, one of the best things to do is, spend the $100 yourself. Contact them and say, hey, I would like to come out and show you guys what I could do for you. And a lot of times they'll be like, sure, we'll give you access. We'll give you the access you need, whatever. Maybe set up equipment. I don't know. But if you're trying to get your foot in the door, sometimes that is the best way to go about it. If you can cough up a few $100, then you're going to have a better chance of getting your foot in the door. If you can just go there and work your ass off and show them that it would be worth it for them to have you out there the next time.
I
agree with that advice. Couldn't have said it better.
All right. Anything else from you guys?
No. Eat breakfast. It's the most important meal of the day. Stay strong and always brush your teeth.
Exercise. All right, exercise.
I got one Don't thing. All right. I got one thing I want to say to my fans, and they'll recognize it as soon as I upload it to Youku, and that is Ma, 我上电视啦.
Wait. Is that?
What's up?
That's the SCV.
What?
Wait. Was that the SCV board?
Thank you for your call.
Thank you. Thank you. Wait, what? What just happened there?
Wait, that sounded like the SCV voice acting for StarCraft. I don't know. What did he just say? I didn't hear him.
He said, Mom, I'm on TV.
Oh,
he always says it in all his casts.
Who is that? Who was that?
He has a bunch of different names, but one of his names is Breaker or something. And
did you just say he's known by many different names?
Hey, before you start calling out people that are known by many different names, you better remember that Major's in the Zerg Illuminati chat, okay?
So you mean Special? Yeah. Special. That's his name.
Special.
Oh, is he? He's Special StarCraft 2 or whatever? Is that who he is?
Right now he's a Velo on North America ladder.
Wait, what? I thought that was Major. Never mind.
Okay, whatever. Anyways, that guy's he's a... He casts stuff in Chinese, yeah. But he's actually a white guy, so it's kind of interesting.
Oh, I think God, it's that guy.
Ender, that's his main name.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? I feel bad that we hung up on him because I have some real advice for him. This is gonna seem like a dickish thing to say, but you know what? I've been told that before. I've encountered that guy four times, and all four times, let's just put it out there. It was him telling me, or asking, can I restream that thing you're doing only in Chinese? And then he would say, can you get me a job? And, he puts it out there. So that sound, this is the double-edged sword. On the one hand, kudos to him for having the balls to constantly ask people, how do I get my name out there? Because actually, you have to do that. So that's that. But the second piece of advice I'd give, hopefully he's still listening, he comes off very much so, and I think this call is kind of an example of that, of a little bit too his question was, well, how do I get someone to send me somewhere? And then we're like, well, it's really expensive. He's like, no, it'd be a couple $100. DJ Wheat's advice is really good, but it's also very obvious. Like, get your own ass out there and put yourself to work. Like, he's very asky and grabby, is I guess what I'm trying to say. So you might want to tone it down a little bit.
When MLG did their first StarCraft II event, and I wasn't, you know, I was the guy who was like, I feel like I can actually do a little bit better than job than a couple of the guys that they had out there. So I probably could have gone to the folks at MLG and said, hey, here's my track record, you know, blah, blah, blah. I know you guys know who I am. You know, bring me out. But instead I was like, yo, I'm going to, you know, I'd like to just pay my way. I'd like to just come out and sort of show you guys what I can do and how hard I'm willing to work and et cetera. And it got me a job. Like, no one should ever be afraid to do that. And I think it's one of the best ways to get experience, especially in a space like this. I know it might seem odd to just, like, you're kind of buying your way in, but you know what you're doing? You're that's the best way you could show someone, yeah, like, how well you could perform if you're just willing to, like, you know, give them this service and they're like, wow, you know, maybe next time we do need to have Ender back or whatever.
Yep.
Anna
has a similar story. Like, when I first joined EG, she's always been good in front of the camera, and we were like, you know, I'm dating this girl that would be a really good host. And EG looked at that as like a yet another player, like, get my girlfriend a job. And they're like, no thanks. So what Anna did is she sent herself to the first few events that we attended, and she just recorded interviews and videos for herself on her own YouTube. And EG saw that, and they were like, well, actually, you're pretty competent, so how about we do test you out? And the rest is history. Now she works in management.
Yep. So, all right, good advice all around. Let's take another caller, 813. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's going on?
Not much, man.
Quick question.
Sure.
Sorry, I'm lagging behind. I didn't even see that you picked up. All right. So I was watching Chan Man's little show he got on there. He had Destiny on there today, and they were talking about the whole grubby thing. Yesterday I watched that. Not going to lie, I cried. That was an emotional moment. That was a great moment. And then today on Chan Man's stream, I was expecting, you know, for them to talk about it and be like, yeah, great moment for StarCraft. This is what we need. We need to show real emotion when people win. And what happens? Destiny, usual cynical self. So my question is, what is it going to take for Destiny's heart to grow three sizes larger?
Oh.
What the hell?
I actually have a prepared Inside the Game speech for that. Let me read it right for you. I got it right here.
Okay.
We at Inside the Game believe that Stephen Bonnell, a.k.a. Destiny, is a fantastic human being that is fully capable of having opinions and fielding said opinions in a decent manner. We would like to wish him the best of luck as he goes on in his endeavors for the rest of his life. Also, he is funny. Sincerely, Inside the Game.
You know, Jeff, if I was in the same room as you right now, I'd walk up and give you a high five.
P.S. Sorry, there's an addendum. P.S. In case you didn't know, his heart is already so fucking big that it is impossible to measure in any sort of metric system that is used on this earth. So I think that pretty much answers everything.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. All right.
All right, guys.
Thanks.
Take it easy.
Yep, bye.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, TJ Weed.
Yeah.
My day was made today. If we check r/new on Reddit StarCraft, we have a thread saying, does anyone else think that, or DAE, think that ZenoSider is awesome?
With there you one go.
Oh my gosh. Like, the internal war is going to start amongst the Terrans. I love it. This is great. We're going to be able to make a reality show around this, like fighting over the Terran spot on Inside the Game. The community gets involved. This is great. This is good for the show. I'll make sure I take a look at that afterwards. All right, let's take another one. Area code 714. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, thanks, guys. Big fan of you guys. I live here in Anaheim, so thanks to MLG for the past couple of years. My question was about Pro League this past weekend, also the future of Pro League, and also Team 8 got sponsored by Jyn Air Green Wings. That was really fucking cool. Maybe we can talk about that. I know it's a little bit old. So, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. And that was on our topics. Pro League Finals, let's kind of go into it. So Kespa teammate, let's kind of start there. They get sponsored by Jenner Green Wings, who also, if I'm not mistaken, picked up a League of Legends team, just kind of showing that the esports support over there is still very strong. And this isn't the first time that we've seen an airline actually get behind a league and or a team. But I think it's good because there was recently a lot of discussion about like, oh, there's a couple of teams that might be in trouble and maybe some sponsors aren't really getting behind it. But this sort of is like alleviates some of those fears, I think, as far as that's concerned. Additionally, a League of Legends Pro League was announced, which means that potentially, because of the way the teams work, that the Pro League for StarCraft II will have a little bit more open format. Not confirmed, but we might see some other teams that maybe we didn't expect to see. And then, of course, we had the Pro League Finals, Woongjin Stars and STX Seoul. Anyone watch it?
Yeah, yes, I did actually. Yep. On my little phone in a hotel in Vegas. I actually knew STX Seoul was going to win from, I mean, that sounds weird. I had felt like they were going to win for a long time. Not even just because they have innovation or something like that, but because they've really come together as a team. But also, like, almost in an American football-esque kind of way, they're the team that caught fire at the right time. The Woongjin Stars played the regular season the best. I don't think anyone would dispute that. Obviously, the records speak for themselves. But STX, like, turned it on as a team. I mean, Deer started to perform. Obviously, innovation held it down. Like, they became the more complete squad, and it was... I felt like the writing was on the wall for a while for them. Then they won 4-2, so it wasn't even that close.
Yeah. Anyone else?
And a big shout out to Apollo, because he actually bet against me, and I won $50 off his dumbass.
Good job.
And it was good, too, because STX won 2-0, so I'm like, oh, Apollo, oh, no. And he's like, Jeff, he's like, you'll see, mate. Like, this is going to turn around. And then it did. It went 2-2. And he was sending me all these degenerate betting
tweets. Oh, yeah, I just know he probably got super confident after that.
Yep. Then I actually missed, like, the last game or two, and I went to sleep, and I woke up to one text. Fuck you.
Oh, so. That's good. All right. Let's take another call here. We got area code 386. Hello, and welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Not much.
Yo.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Wheat. I talked to you at Red Bull, and I told you Eric could 386 pick up for me.
All right.
And you picked up for me.
I have fulfilled. I'm done here tonight. I'm done. What's up?
All right. Well, I just wanted to talk about Red Bull a little bit. I was there, and I talked to a lot of people, and it was, I would say, almost 70% StarCraft II fans and about 30% Dota, LoL, and other game fans. And I just think that having a little smaller event like that in a place that doesn't have a lot of events come through was a really successful kind of thing. And would love to see if there was more tournaments like that.
Yeah.
Come through.
It was, it was certainly like a little bit more intimate, like some of the, even I would say, like earlier events that we used to see in 2010, 2011. Maybe so much as even like a smaller scale Iron Squid, which definitely like has that more intimate feel overall. But generally, it seemed like most of the spectators really did sort of enjoy everything. I felt like the pacing seemed to be pretty good, at least from my perspective. There were some good matches as well. But I'm just glad to hear that from a spectator's point of view that it was good. And I do wish that there were more events where people could just go and sort of experience. I don't even care what game it is. Like, whether it's Call of Duty or League of Legends or StarCraft 2, like, it's pretty cool to be able to go to a place, even like a Full Sail, and you know, obviously meet other people who are interested in what you're interested to. Maybe meet some folks. That's only happening if major events are occurring, you know? And, I mean, maybe you guys can speak to it. Smaller lands are definitely, like, not as prominent anymore. Bar crafts are definitely an option, but even those are kind of, you know, hard to find. But what do you guys think about the smaller types of events, more intimate versions?
I like them. I think they have a lot of things to offer. I mean, I feel like we've talked about this kind of idea with when we mentioned like Home Story Cup. I don't think that the scene would be better for having 8 or 9 Home Story Cup like tournaments. So I don't know that I would wish that we had a flood of smaller tournaments, but I do like that Red Bull has stepped up and said, let's take esports to cities that perhaps don't typically have, I mean, that was at least one of their first mission statements, to cities that don't have your big MLGs, but also let's do it in a different way. And I liked the studio feel, Day 9 hosting, you know, always great. And I liked how they really engaged the players and made it a lot about them. And then they had fun with the players too. So it had like an infectious fun feel to that tournament. And I thought that, that kind of attitude, that kind of atmosphere is something that is really beneficial for everyone to look in on, I feel like.
I think it's actually really, really, I mean, one example that I'm thinking of right now is just when NASL was, you know, when it went to Canada, which is like a place where they don't typically get as many events. And the fans there were just absolutely, like, completely passionate.
Ape shit.
Yeah, they were crazy. So, like, I think it's really nice when you can take an event to these places where they don't normally have stuff, and they'll get super excited about it. So I think it should be done. I mean, it shouldn't, like Jeff said, it shouldn't be, like, every tournament should do this, but I think it is really nice for it to happen every once in a while.
All right. Caller, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And just want to say, I know you guys are doing SEQL finals at DreamHack, but maybe season 2 somewhere in the U.S. where we could come visit it.
Yep.
We need more
U.S.
events.
Man.
Specifically
possible.
Southeast Florida, says this caller.
Yeah, I'll be all over it. I drove 4 hours to get there. So
good on you, man. Thank you for your passion, too, by the way. I appreciate it.
For sure. Yeah, thanks so much, man. Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care, guys.
Awesome. All right. Another call. We've got area code 925. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. I live in the Bay Area. Wondering if I know EG Suppy and I know InControl lives in the Bay Area. I was wondering if you guys know of any bar crafts or any like local tournaments that are going to be going on.
Oh, shit. I feel like this is a plant, man. That, like, Suppy paid this guy to call.
This
Suppy,
guy lives where I live.
Suppy,
lives,
what's up?
He literally lives in my area code.
What? Well, dude, tell him what's up then.
Yeah.
Isn't there an event?
Yeah, there's an event.
Coming up? You want to tell him about it?
This is the time to plug, Conan.
Huh?
This is the time to plug.
This is a time where I should say there is a really great event coming up in Berkeley in about 3 weeks. The Bay Area Team Liquid LAN, number 11. You should come out and check it out. A lot of cool people are going to be there. Root Gaming is going to be there. A lot of EG players are going to be there. Nathanius is going to be there. Other casters are going to be there. Promise is going to be there. And it's on August 31st. You can find more information on it on Team Liquid. If you look at, if you search for Bay Area LAN, you should find it. And that's going to be coming up in a couple weeks. And in about a week and a half, there's also a big tournament happening in San Francisco called LANhammer, which also a lot of players are going to. And that's another one you should check out. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming up.
Yeah, because I live in Antioch where the Root House is at right now, so... Okay,
oh,
I
yeah.
actually want to visit them eventually if I can find out where they're at. No stalker status, but...
I've almost tracked them down via Google Maps, but... as far as bar crafts, I know, Jeff, you've mentioned some things about possibly some gatherings as, you know, between Rude and EG and some other teams kind of being out there that's potentially possible, right?
Yes, I know that we're doing State of the Games 100th episode on the 15th, and I think there's tentative plans that somewhere in the Bay Area we will be having a bar craft to just kind of go hang out with people and do that. But it'd be fun if we could do this right. I'm not going to lie, and I know that Alex isn't listening to this right now, so I can say this very safely, because obviously this won't get back to him because it's the internet. Until I ask for what I'm about to ask. But I've been in his ear about doing a barcraft, an EG-sponsored barcraft in the Bay Area. There are a crap ton of StarCraft fans here, an absolute crap ton, so I know it would be a success.
Yeah.
I know it would be fun, and there's no question in my mind that we should do it. But EG's been so bogged down with all our projects that he hasn't really put it at the top. I'm going to ask, and this is the first time I've done this on Inside the Game, I think, if you're listening right now and you have a Twitter, please tweet at... What is his fucking Twitter? It's like Otters are cool.
Otters are cool.
It's not Otters
say,
are neat.
Get a barcraft in San Francisco. And then anything else you want. You can tell him that bacon's delicious. You can ask him to wear less t-shirts and dress nicer. You can tell him that In Control deserves another raise. you can tell him to, you can hashtag bring back Idra. Whatever you want, your own thing, that's fine. But I want him to get his ass bombed with get a Barcraft in San Francisco. Because at this point in time, it's stupid that we haven't done it yet. I agree with you, caller. We should have done it a long time ago, and we should be doing one every weekend. But he's too busy or something, trying to take over the world. Idiot.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate the clean answers.
Thank you for your call. Have a good one.
See you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to the chat. If you guys do that, everyone listening, if you bomb him with a good 100 tweets, I'd really appreciate that. And I would, you know, thank you for doing that.
Where's the goat lust?
Goat lust.
Where is the goat lust?
Is he not calling again?
This is like the 45th time.
What? Dude, goat lust has a fucking amazing track record, man.
Okay, this is like the third time in like six.
Should we be worried that he went
ATV there he is.
Again?
See? Okay. He's on top of shit. He's ready.
He was just giving other people a chance.
All right, he was. Ladies and gentlemen, to conclude inside the game, we've got the one and only Goatlust. Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh, g'day, mate. Not too bad. Not too bad, mate.
Good, good. I like those days where you're not too bad.
Yeah. Doing pretty well this week. Got my first vehicle and shit, so
what?
Pretty exciting week for me.
Wait, that's not a dune buggy? Like an actual car or something?
Yeah, like a car, yeah.
What kind of car?
Yeah, my grandparents gave it away because, you know, they decided they're a bit too old to continue driving and that sort of shit. So it's a V8 Calais, which is, you know, from the Aussie equivalent of GM, you know, so...
Nice. So, it was too much for them, so they're like, we got to give the V8 away.
Well, you know, 80 years old, he decided, you know, my eyes aren't so great, so, you know, okay. Fuck it, whatever.
You know what, that's being a responsible old person, man. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So,
good stuff.
We've got a new, I know that you didn't know ahead of time, but Thorzane's not with us, Xenocider's here. Hopefully that won't change your question for the folks this week. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, with it's a bit of a timely question, I suppose, because Stefano's leaving. I'm wondering if you guys think that there are, you know, enough new players entering into our pro scene, the foreign scene, and if you think that who you think maybe will kind of step up to that superstar foreign player sort of status that Idra and Stefano have held, if you think there's anyone who's, you know, going to make it there?
Good question. I don't know. I think the climate is really difficult for that. I think when Idra and Stefano rose to their fame, I feel like their bold personalities are a big, big part of why people were so attracted to rooting for them and seeing them play and cheering them on. But certainly, let's not make a mistake here. It was also because they were winners. Greg, right out of the beta for Wings of Liberty, was winning the Kings of Beta tournament, going off to Germany for the first major tournament, taking second there. His bad boy reputation kind of carried the interest. And then Stefano, of course, just straight up wins. He won shit for like 2 years, just won tournaments right and left. So that's a big part of it. So I feel like in order to answer this question, you'd have to talk about a player that's winning tournaments, not just placing highly. They actually have to be a winner, but then they have to be equal parts personality. And right now, I feel like the closest to that is like a Naniwa. But as you said, someone coming up. So I feel like Naniwa kind of steps out of the conversation at that point. And of the guys that are coming up, I don't know that I see anybody that's like that. And I guess I began saying that the climate's really hard for that. That's also because the game's at its hardest point. I feel like mechanically and skill-wise, there's more traveling Koreans playing at a higher level than there was towards the early days of Wings of Liberty. So winning a tournament becomes a harder feat. It used to be like DreamHack. If you could beat Hero and Tasia, you might have a chance at winning that thing. But these days, it's like if you could beat Hero Tasia and half of Kespa, then you have a chance at placing in the top eight, which is insane. So I don't know. I think that if my Lebo money bet would be that there will never be an Idra or Stefano for the foreseeable future from a foreigner world.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. Suppy or Zeno? Oh, go ahead. Go less.
Yeah, yeah, it seemed like, yeah, as you were saying, that the climate was really different when Idra was doing well, and it's obviously gotten a lot harder now, and Stefano was just, you know, a freak thing out of nowhere, really. Like, pretty rare sort of player.
Yeah,
I think I mean, one person to look at is Ghost User, who we're talking about, but then again, if we're talking about personality and stuff, then he doesn't really fulfill that criteria.
Or winning tournaments.
I mean, he's the closest, like, recently, top four at DreamHack. I think that's the closest we've had for quite a while. So, I mean, we'll have to see. Right now, yeah, I agree with Jeff. Like, I don't see anybody foreseeably actually winning and being, like, the champion of something for a while.
So. You know what's tough is, like, so let's do this, too. Another guy that was kind of like an Idra or Stefano would be Huck. But Huck didn't have that bad boy persona. He was one of the guys that did it, that, like, he was the little white knight, the little white onion knight, that was, like, snuggly and carried a pillow around and gave cutesy answers. And when he was on shows, like, he'd tickle his own toes and giggle, and people were like, ah, that fucking Huck. Ah, Huck. And then he would win tournaments. So he kind of did the opposite thing of Idra and Stefano, where Stefano would be like, that's a stupid question, I don't like you. And Greg would just be like, you know, like, stare at someone across the stage and not shake their hand. Like, that was the badass, you know, rough stuff. And then Huck would be, like, the adorable thing. But even on the cutesy side, you don't have anybody. I guess this is a really long-winded way of saying, like, Huck's another example of someone that did it, won tournaments, and had a personality that made him more attractive than just his win. But, like, happy or angry, we don't have anybody that's really that kind of personality. Kane, for a while, I know I'm really high up on Kane, but Kane kind of, like, he was like this chip on the shoulder, nasty Fox Mulder based out of Canada. But he had the skill to win tournaments. But so far in his offline events outside of the Shoutcraft tournament, he hasn't really performed to that expectation, I feel. But he's also gotten super, super nice. He's like,
yeah, dude, I remember Kane, like, back in the day, dude. Oh, my God. Like, he would, like, come bailing bust me and then dance all of his lings and banes in my base and then throw down hatcheries, and then the next game I would manor mule him and he'd be like, why are you BMing me? And I'm like, didn't you just BM me last game? He's like, no, that wasn't BM. I was like, what? And yeah,
you guys are still
and a ladder, but no, he's gotten a lot, but he's really nice now, but like back then it was pretty hilarious.
Dora, you guys are still getting BM'd by him in secret on his smurfs.
I'm sure. I want him to I want him to get to the point where he's winning tournaments, be that good, and have that kind of attitude, and like to challenge the old guard of Koreans. Like, I don't know that Jaedong would know what it's like to have Lings dancing in his face as they're like running. he'd be like, I don't think he understands. I need him killed. Someone, just end it now. But I like that. You know what really reminds me, and this person deserves a mention in this conversation, is Scarlet. I remember Scarlet on her way to winning the North American WCS Championship, which, again, was obviously against no Koreans, but even against Koreans, she would, like, giggle and fold her legs and then murder people with Ultralis, like, just fucking raffle stomp them, and they're dancing up and down, and she's just like, hee-hee-hee-hee, I guess I micro a little bit more, hee-hee, you got fucking murdered, hee-hee. You know, like, it was just like, we were like, oh, shit. Like, that was kind of exciting. But then, unfortunately, she went into obscure land, aka Korea, and she's a really good small minnow in a giant pond, and it's gotten kind of quiet. We don't hear the Scarlet dominance as much anymore.
Yeah, I feel like the best personality combination, or like the best thing you can have in esports, is if you're arrogant and also you're winning. Like, right when you stop winning, it's like when it gets kind of rough for you. But like, if you're winning and you're arrogant, that's when like the most people, that's like the pinnacle of people liking you.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know that you have to
be arrogant. Fucking hell. Greg wasn't winning for a long time. And, you know, his popularity was still fucking huge.
Well, yeah. that's why I don't know with that comment. Because Greg was arrogant and winning at the beginning. But then when he wasn't winning and remained arrogant, he maintained fans because they wanted to see him explode. A large part of his fan base wanted to watch Greg just fucking wallow and implode on himself.
But the thing is, if you like never win in the first place, then you kind of just end up being like Comet X, and then like
you have to win.
You have to win at the beginning, and then afterwards you can be like, whatever. But
I can't believe you just mentioned Combat X when we're talking about superstars. They're going to, like, carry the Foreigner torch.
Man.
Dude, Combat X, WCG, man. Took a game off.
Almost big party. Oh, my God.
Foreigner Hope. Foreigner Hope.
While we're on the subject, just putting it out there, he still owes me $100 because this is one of my favorite StarCraft stories. We're going to talk about Combat X. He used to hound me, stream cheat, just fucking harass me as all get out. And then one day, he was like, if you can beat me, I think it was like, if you can beat me in a best of three, I will give you $100. So I beat him 2-0. Then in the next one, he's like, all right, let's do it again, double or nothing. And then I beat him again 2-0. And then the last one, he was like, all right, if you beat me this time, I'll retire. Guess who got fucking wrecked?
Combat X.
He didn't really retire, though. He kind of came back a few more times, but still.
Why
it was a good
not?
Story.
I want my $100.
I do. I'm waiting. When he makes his 19th appearance, where he comes back, and he makes the threat on Team Liquid where he apologizes for being bad manner for the 27th time, I'm going to PM him instantly and say, can I
I'll
please
I'll believe
have
him this time, though. I might believe him this time. All right. Goat Lust, as always, we love your calls.
Right. Yeah, I love coming on. Thank you very much, gents.
Thank you for being on.
Good question. I like
it. And good job on the show, Xenocider. You've done well this episode, mate.
Thanks.
Awesome. Well, Goat Lust, he knows a lot about Inside the Game, so that's you got the Goat Lust.
You've got the goat blessing.
Congratulations. All right. Well, now is the true, the true test. So, as always, we have our goodbyes, and it just so happens that the Terran is the one who always starts.
Yeah.
So, Xenocider, we're throwing you into the fire. Yep, that's right. Calling down mules.
I'd first like to say that I measure my self-worth by how many Twitter followers I have, and right now... I'm pretty much on the verge of killing myself, so if you could, if you could save me,
that's like the most honest. I'm gonna follow you because that was like the most honest Twitter grab ever.
Good sale. Good sale.
Yeah, I'm doing it, man.
So twitter.com/egzenorc, and also give a shout out to my latest sponsors: Monster, Kingston HyperX, Razor, Astro, XMG, Sam, I am. Jinx, Beyond Gaming, and Need for Seat.
Wow.
Very good.
Job well done. You can stay on the team.
Congratulations.
A little bit longer.
Okay.
Suppy.
Thank you guys for watching once again. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I had a lot of fun today. I'm going to be driving home right after this to compete in the Hong Kong Esports Qualifiers. It's being casted by Promise and Ender, maybe. So I'm playing against Huck, so if you want to tune in for that.
For Challenger League?
That'd be interesting. No, the Hong Kong Esports thing.
Oh.
So, yeah. And like I mentioned before, I have the Battle LAN coming up on August 31st. So if you guys are in the Bay Area, I would love to see you guys and meet you guys. LANhammer, I'm also going to that as well. I think Jeff is also going to that. In 2 weeks, something about that.
10 days,
yeah. And follow me on Twitter at EGSuppy, and thanks to all of our sponsors. Thanks for watching.
Well done, Suppy.
Well done.
In control.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We had a great show. It was a lot of fun. Shout out to Lebo for being awesome. That was a job well done. I think Thorzane is somewhere right now, really worried, really afraid.
Lebo's sleeping, Lebo's
coming for him.
Best show ever.
Shout out to EG and all our sponsors, obviously. Couldn't do anything without them. As for myself, in 3 hours time, or actually 2 hours and 51 minutes, we'll be broadcasting another SC2L match tonight. Root Nathanius will be casting with us. I know it's late. I know that there's the Challenge League or whatever going on, so if you tune in, I appreciate it. Otherwise, no big deal. And then, like I said, I'll be doing an interview with Adam Sessler tomorrow at Wednesday. If you don't know who that is, look him up. He's actually the best gaming journalist, in my opinion, there is. He's just fucking amazing. Really good. Let's see. What else am I doing? I think that's about it. I will be at PAX Prime, by the way. So if you are a Seattleite or going to be at PAX Prime, We will be playing StarCraft there, and I will be giving out handshakes and hugs and games, and I'll play with you. So if you're going to attend, I hope to see you there.
Awesome. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I don't have a whole lot to sign off with. Now, there should be a Live on 3 tomorrow, but I understand that the International 3 is having its pregame show at exactly the same time. Slasher is trying to arrange something from Seattle, and if something is arranged, we will have a show. This will be tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Otherwise, I don't know. Maybe we'll just follow along with the pre-show, but I'll let you know via Twitter. Other than that, you know, I just want to say we talk a lot about StarCraft II and the results and some of the drama that happens. And I just have to say that I still fall on the line of I play this game because I constantly find myself having fucking fun with it. And yesterday we had JP on Kings of Tin, and I played one of those like super fucking fun games, you know, like that I will remember for a long time. And I just released a video of it. It's on DJ Wheat, or it's on YouTube.com/DJ Wheat, and I put the link in chat too. Don't forget that gaming's still about having fun, bitches. Don't ever forget it. And thank you guys, Xenocider. Thank you so much. You did a great job on tonight's show, as always. Suppy and Jeff, you're amazing. I'm going on family vacation this weekend.
Have fun.
I will have fun because Mini Week goes back to school next week, second grade. And finally, my house is quiet again. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for episode 79. We'll see you next time. We're out of here. Peace.
Peace.
Bye.